Good morning. The house will come to order. Please stand if you're able. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Kenemer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by the Reverend Miriam Mendez, who used to be pastor at my congregation and now serves as the pastor for Hispanic Ministries at the First Baptist Church of Portland. Welcome, Reverend Mendez.
Let us pray. Most holy God and gracious God, high above us, yet present within us, we pray this morning that you help us draw near to you. I pray that with your light and your spirit, you guide our souls, our thoughts, and all our actions on this day in this session. God, we pray that you touch the lips of each person here and grant them wisdom, that they may speak words of truth, words of kindness, words of justice, and love to each other. Open our eyes, O Lord, to your worldwide vision. May we see you at the work in our lives, in this place, and in the state of Oregon, and around the globe. And also, Almighty God, I pray this morning that for this session, that you open unto us light for our darkness, open unto us courage for our fears, hope for our despair. Open unto us, Lord, peace for our turmoil. Open unto us joy for our sorrows, strength for our weaknesses. And open unto us wisdom for our confusion, forgiveness for our brokenness, tenderness for our toughness, and love for our hates. Make us partners in your creative acts for all people, and reconcile us to ourselves, to others, and to yourself. Lord God, I pray, may your spirit of truth guide this session. May your justice direct this session, and may your love unite this session. I pray this in the strong and tender name of the Creator, Redeemer, and Comforter. Amen.
Thank you very much, Reverend Mendez. Great to have you here. Appreciate you blessing us this morning. Courtesies. Let us begin with Representative Bruhn, our moment in sesquicentennial history.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's history moment is from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Warren Aney, who served 43 years in the Oregon National Guard, or Army National Guard. Today's moment is about the 1st Oregon Volunteer Infantry. During the 1860s, the major military Indian conflicts of the Pacific Northwest were in the Great Basin and Snake River areas of southeastern Oregon and southern Idaho. These conflicts were called the Snake Indian Wars. For over a decade, a number of regular Army units had been stationed in and had patrolled this area. After the American Civil War began in April of 1861, most of these regular Army units were sent east. A call then went out to the states and territories of the Pacific Coast to provide volunteer regiments to fill that void. In November 1861, Oregon began to raise companies for the 1st Oregon Volunteer Cavalry Regiment. By the summer of 1862, this regiment was serving throughout eastern Oregon and into southeastern Washington Territory. In late 1864, colleagues, Oregon began organizing the 1st Oregon Volunteer Infantry Regiment to reinforce its cavalry volunteers. George Byron Curry, commander of Company E, 1st Oregon Volunteer Cavalry, and the regiment's most vigorous field commander, was given command and promoted to colonel. With the discovery of gold in the Blue Mountains in 1861, the regiment also took on the task of protecting the freight trains and miners associated with the gold fields of the Blue Mountains. Regular Army troops began returning to the region in 1866. The last company mustered out in August of 1867. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much. Further courtesies, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask that you extend courtesies to my mother, Linda Clem, who's here from Coos Bay today. She's been up helping care for her grand puppy who had surgery, and I asked her to come down and join me today. Thank you.
Further courtesies, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would like you to help me welcome three pages today from my district. All of these young ladies attend Taft High School, the first of whom is Alyssa Clayton. If you'd like to stand up, Alyssa. And Alyssa has an interest in environmental science and is looking at that as a career. Thank you for being here today. Also have with me Faith Overton. And Faith is a talented and gifted student, enjoys reading novels and poetry, and is interested in a nursing career. Thank you for coming. And another Alyssa, Alyssa Holder. He is interested in band and soccer, and she has goals in the world of education. So we have a nicely rounded group with us today from Taft High School.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I'm hoping that you can all extend courtesies to an honorary page today, visiting here from McNary High School's Patricia Brown. She's a sophomore, 15. She loves to dance, and she's in marching band, plays the flute, so give her a big hello.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, welcome our honorary page today from Leslie Middle School, Hunter Fredo. Hunter is a 8th grader at Leslie, takes cello lessons, loves scouting, and wants to be an artist. And I asked him whether he wanted to paint or make jewelry, and he said all of the above when he grows up. Welcome, Hunter.
Representative Weird.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, my honorary page today is Hunter Pico. If he'd stand up. Hunter is 15 from Canby, and he attends Canby High School. He's a freshman. His activities and interests include riding his bicycle and playing Xbox. His career goals to be in veterinary science. I also happen to know that he's an FFA member. He's actually also a very kind-hearted, curious young man with a wonderful sense of humor. It's not often that a father gets the microphone at an assembly to tell the entire state of Oregon how proud he is of his son. But I am. He's a great young man, and please welcome him here today.
Welcome, and to all of our pages, we appreciate your service to the House today. Hope you have a fruitful experience today. Further courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the gallery today from Colton, I hope you'll welcome Ms. Latzow's 7th grade Colton Middle School class and extend the courtesies of the House. Welcome from Colton. I'll see you all later.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Enjoy your day. And colleagues, if we could have a little extra special attention for this final courtesy. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to extend courtesies to the side aisle where sit Judge Ann Aiken and her son, Zach Klonowski, who are here for our first order of business, honoring their departed husband, Jim Klonowski.
Any further courtesies? You want to take advantage of the mic, Representative Smith?
Mr. Speaker,
we'll grant you latitude at this point in courtesies.
Given the matter that I'm about to cover at the first order of business, I'd rather not clutter that with something else. And if another announcement needs to be made later, maybe we can do that.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further courtesies, the clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Gilman. Representative Gilman. Off the floor at the moment. Excused for business of the House, Representative Buckley. All other members are present. Representative Springer, for what purpose are you in the queue? Okay. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 5550 and 515, House Bills 5043, 5044, 5045, 5046, 5047, 2087, 2090, 2135, 2240, 2244, 2268, adopted HCR 1, 8, and HCR 16. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed House Bills 5001, 5029, 5036, and 2079.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 11 in memoriam, James Klonsky, 1925 to 2009.
Question now rises. Upon final reading, adoption of SCR 11A, Representative Smith, followed by Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution. Professor Klonowski, as I could never remove myself from calling him, did not stand on ceremony and would not, I imagine, have loved this one. We attempted to honor him on his last day of the school year, and he would have none of it. My hope today is that we might have an expression of ceremony sufficient to offend him. To the family, it is an honor to honor him and you, and thanks for coming. Professor Klonowski was the father of the Dollar Checkoff, the rebirth of which his sons are working on now with the support of many people in this room. He was a legendary University of Oregon professor with students ranging from Senator Vicky Walker to Representative Scott Bruin to many of the advocates in the hallway right now, to Representative Judy Stigler as a good friend who is in the back of the room, to many others I won't name. The question he asked his students, who controls America? How can we gain, regain, or retain that power? He fostered intellectual curiosity. He encouraged students not to take his word for it. But if we didn't, we were wrong. If there is a short list of Oregonians in the last 50 years who have shaped the political discourse in this state, not merely through their own public words or their own elections or their financial contributions, but through their example and their teaching and their mentorship, it is hard for me to think of anybody who would more obviously make that short list than James Klonowski. As far as I know, I took every class he offered. We stayed in touch as I coached the basketball team on which our best player was a Klonowski family friend. His lie-infested recommendation helped earn this lifelong public school kid admission into Harvard Law School. He was, for many people, a giant. His life was a testament to the notion that the public good does not merely take care of itself. The common interest requires champions, and those champions need to bring along a next generation. And when those champions fall, that next generation needs to say thank you. Frog was a bearded man on 13th Street who sold little joke books. What's invisible and smells like carrots? Bunny farts. Most of his jokes were less appropriate and no more humorous. I apologize, Ramona, I picked carefully. My fraternity friends and I mostly looked down upon this dirty man who dwelled our streets. One day, Professor Klonowski brought up in class that Frog and the man's legal challenges were blockading his ability to ply his trade and remain on the street. And in support of Frog's rights, Professor Klonowski said, "You got to decide who you're for. The system is one of figuring out what and who you're for. And I'm for Frog.
thanks to Jim Klonowski, I'm for Frog, too. And so are many other Oregonians. The greatest structural defect in our democracy is that the huge bulk of political muscle is privately interested. It exists to advocate for the financial interests of its members and its contributors. On the other hand, a huge portion of public problems are nobody's job. And that's why they have to be all of our job. There is nobody in my life outside my immediate family who has taught me that lesson and taught others that lesson more frequently and more profoundly than Jim Klonowski, as he might appreciate. We must be priceless. Definition of priceless: worth a lot, not for sale. I appreciate the chance to honor him now. There may be others who want to. I urge an aye vote in the resolution, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, and thank you to the good representative from the Bedrock District. You absolutely nailed it. In my life, I've had a lot of good teachers, but two great teachers. Life-changing teachers. One of them was Miss Riggs in fourth grade at Woodstock Elementary in Southeast Portland, and the other was Professor Klonowski, grades 13 through 16 at the University of Oregon. He was a great man and a brilliant student and teacher of American government. He, more than any teacher I've ever had, and I'm sure that all of the people here that were with Professor Klonowski can attest to this, taught us that education was not a destination, but was a lifelong journey. And I'm sure that our book expenses at all the political science sections of bookstores for all those students are an attest to that. Like the representative from the Bedrock District, Professor Klonowski also wrote me a letter of recommendation. To his lament and his sadness, he wrote that letter of recommendation to me for a business school, not a law school. After he agreed to do it, he criticized me for choosing the vocation of business rather than the art of law. But he, as was well said, did a good job and got me in nonetheless. Jim Klonowski was a partisan in the best sense of the word. He was a partisan Democrat in that he believed that his party, the Democratic Party, was the best means to facilitate the policies and people that he thought best for Oregon and America. He would have been the first to tell you that partisanship is not what we call it today. It is not what we wrongly call partisan. That is, those behaviors that are petty, shallow, trivial, often disingenuous. Instead of calling these behaviors partisan, I'm convinced Professor Klonowski would have called them what they really were: dumb. I wanted to say this morning that he was always fair to the four or five token Republicans that he had in his class. That would probably be a stretch. But he was always fun with those Republicans. And those Republicans, imagine a room this big with 300 or 400 kids, and three or four of us were Republicans in Eugene. And so he had a large degree of fun with us, and the fun went both ways. Professor Klonowski was great at telling us, whether you were Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, or didn't know yet, which was the case for a lot of us, that it wasn't enough to know where you were. It wasn't enough to know your own philosophical groundings, your own party groundings, whatever they may be. You couldn't be in the public arena. You couldn't actively engage, and you couldn't change minds in the public arena unless you also knew and understand and even empathize with the opposing point of view. It's not enough to know where you stand. You have to know where everybody stands if you're going to be effective. And Jim Klonowski was a great teacher of that. When I went to the University of Oregon, I was a physics major, and I have no idea why. And it was after a class, and I took them all 4 years with Professor Klonowski, that I switched to a poli-sci major, and my checkbook and my bank account has been suffering ever since, but I still think it's a great credit to him for helping me switch that. And I just would say, colleagues, we spent a lot of time. He's a worthy man. What we can do here in 10 minutes doesn't come close to covering the legacy, the positive legacy that Jim Klonowski left. We had a lunch with him a few years ago. That was the last time I saw him. And he was getting older, but he was still as sharp and as fun and as positively partisan as ever. Just a great man. And I would just close by saying, Mr. Speaker, colleagues, that Jim Klonowski lived a life worth living. My life and the world are better because he lived. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The two prior speakers have spoken, I think, very eloquently about Jim's work as a university professor and a challenger of young minds. I want to talk about a couple of other aspects of his life. I believe that the fully lived life is not only occupational, but also personal. It involves your family, your children. And I want to mention just a few brief things. Jim had eight children. The five youngest boys are the ones I know the best because they are approximately roughly the same age as my children, at least the older of them are. And Jim, while there were a number of occasions in the last 20 years or so where I had short meetings with him, and he was very, very valuable to me as a mentor in very short meetings, one of them in which he said exactly one sentence had a profound effect on the way I think about things and on my political career. I'm not going to tell you what the sentence was. But the thing that I remember most about Jim in the last 15, maybe 20 years is seeing him on the streets of Eugene driving his minivan full of boys, driving them around to sports practices, driving them from to school or to the variety of the things that they did. This man understood the importance of the different aspects of life, and he lived it fully in his relationship with his children as their father. And I want to honor him for that, as well as for the other things that the other two so eloquently spoke to. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Justin Smith, do you care to close?
Other than to say thank you, Mr. Speaker, no.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Esquivel, for what purpose do you rise?
Just to return to courtesy.
Okay, we'll wait for that. Barton, same reason. Okay. SCR 11, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed and adopted. On behalf of the entire body, we wish to express our gratitude to the family members who are here. Again, thank you very much for being here and for our opportunity to represent your family in this way. Thank you. And for you, those of you in the gallery watching, you just saw a display that doesn't happen very often, and it is not part of our general protocol to allow clapping and other expressions of gratitude. This is a special moment, and so I just want to make sure that you understand that as we go through the rest of the business, it is not appropriate to express those kinds of feelings. This was a special moment for all of us, and thank you for being a part of that as well. With that, Representative Esquivel, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Chair, request return to courtesy.
Representative Esquivel requests unanimous consent that we return to the order of business of courtesies. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In back of me, up in the gallery, we have President Peter Angstead and members from Rogue Community College. I just wanted to welcome them to their capital and hope you have a friendly and good stay.
Thank you for coming to your capital. Representative Holvey, for what purpose do you rise?
Courtesies, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like the House extend courtesies to St. Thomas School from Veneta in my district and led by Father Christopher in the back gallery. I think they're up there. There they are. Welcome to your capital.
I concur. Welcome to your capital. Further courtesies, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming Mr. Guilford's class from Clackamas High School. Will you guys stand up? Thank you very much for coming. I always enjoy the opportunity to speak to you.
And again, welcome to your capital. I hope you enjoy your day with us. Well, thank you. Further courtesies? Seeing none, we will return to the order of business, and that means propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3492 relating to liquefied natural gas and declaring an emergency.
Bill read the first time will be passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills. Consent calendar. Clerk will be read the bill in short summary.
Senate Bill 89 relating to explosives exempts person authorized to possess explosives under license or permit issued by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 89A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer votes aye. Senate Bill 89A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next and a short summary.
Senate Bill 559, relating to motion for intervention in juvenile dependency proceedings, modifies proof required for a motion to intervene in juvenile court proceedings.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 559. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem votes aye. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Representative Barnhart votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Senate Bill 559, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Hanna, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request a brief recess for the purposes of a Republican caucus on the floor.
For how long?
Brief.
5 minutes?
Not to exceed
5 minutes. I suggest we stand at ease for 5 minutes so we don't have to have a roll call again. And we will stand at ease for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, we'll stand at ease. So ordered. Order. When we left, we were in the beginning of third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2228, relating to transfer of development rights from resource lands and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2228A. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2228 comes to you from the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources on a 6-1 vote. It has to do with transferable development rights and opportunities and pilot projects. There are up to 5 pilot projects listed in the bill where landowners outside of an urban growth boundary who own forestry property would be eligible to apply to transfer their existing development rights from one part of their holdings to cluster them over on a smaller piece of their holdings in order to both preserve the working forest and allow some economic development. You see in the bill, it's known as the Rural Jobs Act. It would allow additional home site opportunities for up to 5 different users who apply to go through a process at LCDC, and the priority order is listed. Now, those 5 could be reduced by 3 if owners of properties in the Metolius River Basin, regardless of any outcome on any other bills, if they choose to go to another piece of property, they could utilize these transferable development opportunities. These are not rights in these cases, they're opportunities. And then another provision speaks to the Skyline Forest, which is similar to former Representative Burley's Community Forest Bill last session. If any of those parties, they're all voluntary, if they use those authorizations, it reduces the number of pilot projects available for other users by that number. So that it starts at 5, could go down to 2 available for other timberland owners. If nobody uses them, because that's their right, then there would be 5 available for other timberland owners. With that, I would encourage your support of the bill. It is something that in these times when our timber companies are desperately struggling makes sense to allow them to transfer some of their home site rights to a place that is largely, from the testimony we had, likely to get developed anyway, and sometimes the source of urban forest land conflicts, and this would help ease those conflicts as well as create jobs. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
I rise in opposition to this bill today. I don't understand. This is my third session. My district's never had this much attention. All of the people are telling me how to run my district, what's good for my district. I guess they know what's more better for my district than I know. Well, maybe not. On this floor, against House Bill 2227, the resort bill, which gave away legislative decision-making to a state agency and spoke against irrigation district restrictions in 2227, or how many twos, which would eliminate future resorts in Deschutes County, my district. Now I understand the agency head has realized that my statement was true, and he's discussing changes about the irrigation restriction. Maybe I do know something about my district. Colleagues, I do not object to the establishment of an Oregon Transfer of Development Rights Pilot Program in the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I've offered to work with a good representative from Central and East Salem on a priority bill to establish a TDR program. I do object to allowing the Land Conservation and Development Commission to adopt rules establishing a process for selecting pilot projects and specifying required findings. I do object to requiring the pilot projects to include affordable housing. I do object to including the Skyline Forest as a pilot program with the limitation of 197 units on 640 acres with a limit of 150 area feet of annual water use. Skyland Forest is in my district, and I was not involved in the drafting of this bill or consulted on any part of this bill. Let me give you some background. Some of you were not in this body 4 years ago. I was the sponsor of former Representative Chuck Burley's House Bill 2729 in the 2005 session, which created the Community Forest Authority. The Community Forest Authority was planned to be used for the Skyline Forest area west of Bend in my district. House Bill 2729 allows communities to make long-term land management decisions for local forest resources, conserve wildlife habitat, provide recreational opportunities while sustaining harvesting timber and providing jobs for Oregon. When I came to the 2009 session, I was prepared to introduce legislation to allow Deschutes County and the Skyline Forest owners to move forward with this project. However, due to the economy, there was no movement at that time. Then a few weeks ago, I learned Fidelity National Timber Resources Incorporated, the forest landowner, was interested in development and we're in discussions with the local environmental groups about a project under the concept of House Bill 2729 I sponsored 4 years ago. I was interviewed by the Bend Bulletin, reported that I was prepared to use a priority bill to move the Skyline Forest Project in accordance with the Community Forest Authority. Then I learned the House Agriculture Committee had introduced House Bill 2228 without any input by me, and House Bill 2228 included the Skyline Forest Project as a pilot project. It also included the Matullian Project, which would not be allowed in the Matullius River Basin. A House Agriculture Committee work group was established. It didn't include me. That group recommended the developer be allowed to build fewer than 140 homes in exchange for agreeing to sell 33,000 acres of a community forest. On the evening of April 29th, the House Agriculture Committee received the -4 amendment just before the committee meeting. The -4 amendment increased the homes authorized to 197 homes if the developer agreed to sell about 45,000 acres to a land trust for the community forest.
Representative Widener yields.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. The forest landowner was asked to support this new proposal immediately so the bill could be moved. I opposed the bill and the -4 amendment based upon the fact that developers could not make a sound financial decision on this new data without time to weigh the financial risk. Thus, without more time to study the new conditions, the opportunity could be wasted. The forest landowner agreed the bill did not allow enough land or water rights to make it work. Also, the owners of the 45,000 acres, were only asking for 1,500 acres. A good member of the House Agriculture Committee asked, "Let me get this straight. The owners are asking for 1,500 of the 45,000 acres they own, and you oppose that?" Did I get that right? Let's clarify my opposition. We have a chance to obtain over 43,000 acres of timber and land to manage and enjoy for recreation for the Forest Authority, Community Forest Authority, but only building 197 homes on 1,500 acres, less than 3% of the total forest land. The good representative from Central and East Salem informed me that House Bill 2228 of 197 homes and 640 acres is over 3 acres per home. Colleagues in Central Oregon, 10 acres per home is a small acreage outside the urban growth area. Most home sites outside the urban growth boundary of Bend are on 10, 20, and some 40 acres. Under the existing land use laws, the owner of the land, he could actually cut the trees down, but he could also build 197 homes. And the people of Oregon would lose the opportunity to obtain over 43,000 acres of community forest land. Skyline Forest is a great environmental project for Oregon and the citizens and will create a working forest and recreational opportunities as an economic stimulus. Former Representative Burley and I worked on this bill, which is good for the environment and the economy of Central Oregon. However, House Bill 2228 is designed to take our concept and use that good idea to destroy the Matullian Eco Resort. If the Skyline Forest is a good concept, let it stand on its own, as should the Matullian and other pilot projects. Look at the bill, colleagues. Section 6 states that the commission by rule shall establish a process of selecting pilot projects from among potential projects nominated by local governments. Not here. These are nominated by we don't know who. I do not agree the commission should set both the policy and rules, but even the bill allows projects to be recommended unless you're the Skyline Forest or the Metolian. As a footnote, look at this bill. I'm not sure how we're going to do this. We only have 197 homes, and you're going to have to include affordable housing? I'm not sure how that pencils out. Finally, I'm not sure if the body really cares. We've talked about this in committee, but look at the May 6, 2009 fiscal analysis of this bill. I see a fiscal of at least $120,000, but doesn't seem to bother this body this session. I guess we'll find the money with another new tax because it's not being referred to Ways and Means. You know, however, I guess I'm encouraged. There's a Democrat Senator of Eugene testified in the Senate committee last week in opposition to House Bill 2227 that she intended to investigate more into the DLCD statement in that bill that the fiscal is minimum and no Ways and Means referral is required. I'm going to ask her to perform the same responsible oversight of House Bill 2228's lack of a referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Bruin yields.
Thank you, Representative. The concept of transfer of development rights may be a good idea, but this bill is full of problems. It's been rushed through the system, rushed through with courtesy eyes to get it through the system to get it to the floor, and now we're going to give them courtesy eyes to get it off the floor. The results are it may destroy a very good concept which Representative Burley envisioned over 4 years ago and I'm trying to see accomplished. Colleagues, please vote no on this bill and help me pass another bill to allow Deschutes County and Skyline Forest owner to negotiate a reasonable plan to create Oregon's first community forest. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Stiegler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues.
To the bill.
Okay. Sorry. Colleagues, I rise today in support of House Bill 2228 for a couple of very simple reasons. Earlier on in the session, I was approached by representatives from Fidelity asking if there was an opportunity at any time during this session that there could be a vehicle where the Skyline Forest could be realized, would I support it? And I said, if it had the support of essentially both sides and was common sense and was well-grounded in, that met all the criteria that people on both sides had concerns about, I said, I would not oppose it. I would promote it if I felt that it was an appropriate vehicle. House Bill 2228 is just that. It affords an opportunity for a concept to come to fruition, to create a community forest, yet also afford some development rights in a clustered area, in a clustered community, and it meets the approval of, uniquely, of both the environmental community and the developers. I have had several conversations with representatives from, with a representative from the from Fidelity since the passage of this bill in the House committee, and have and I am assured, I'm trying to say this very carefully, that they are supportive of the concept and the vehicle. They see it as a means to an end for them, and whereas they feel there may be some continuing negotiations on this bill over on the Senate side, and in fact I'm aware that negotiations are ongoing at this time to perhaps increase some of the water rights, and I don't know all the details otherwise, but the bottom line is this, is that the developer, as well as the Deschutes Basin Land Trust and the Central Oregon Land Watch and other environmental communities, see this as a win-win situation. This is an opportunity to create our first community forest in this state, but also recognize that the developer has a right to some kind of compensation for their effort in ceding over the ownership of these properties and these lands. As early as this morning, or as late as this morning, I again had a conversation with a representative from Fidelity who indicated to me that they were still supportive of this effort. Additionally, I want to clarify one thing. There's been a lot of discussion regarding that this forces a vote on the Matolian. No, what this does, and again, both of these opportunities, all of these pilot projects, are optional. They are not mandatory, and I want to underscore that. They are an option to be exercised if the respective entities so desire to exercise those options. Nobody is mandating that this has to happen or anything along those lines. These are not mandates. These are options to be exercised at the choosing of the respective entities. That goes for the issue regarding the Metolius as well. And to try to intermingle them and say that one dominates or one dictates the other is incorrect. This is an opportunity which the Metolian, depending on what happens with House Bill 3100, depending on what happens with that, that they would have an option if 3100 were to pass. If 3100 doesn't pass and they still feel that they can get the Metolian established in the Metolius, then this is unnecessary for them. The final thing I would like to say is it's not just these two entities, but it is potentially other pilot projects which this covers. And again, it's an issue of wedding together economic development and environmental concerns, and this is an appropriate vehicle. And as I indicated earlier in the session to the representative from Fidelity, I would support an effort that I saw that was a balanced approach, and that's, colleagues, exactly how I see this. It is a balanced approach to the process, and I urge your support and your aye vote.
Further discussion. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I voted for this in the committee, and I'm definitely going to be a no today. I want to tell you a little bit why. Several times this session, I've seen last-minute amendments. In this case, I didn't see them until after I came into the room, nor did most of the people in that room even know there was another set of amendments. It gave us no time to talk to the proponents or opponents of it. I had a attorney there from Bandon Dunes, and you know the size of that resort, a destination resort, 850 employees there. I talked about it some time back. He has some concerns. I did not have time to visit with him about how they viewed giving some of these other timber companies some other rights over on the coast that might compete with their enterprise. I called up Roy Wilkerson from OFIC and told him about my concerns. And he acknowledged that, yeah, it was a kind of a strange way for it to happen. When we get in a hurry and we start trying to slide things through in the last minute, that's how we make mistakes and we take advantage of people and we have unintended consequences. We shouldn't be operating this way. You shouldn't be sliding something in at the last minute. If this was so good, why didn't they do a standalone bill? They didn't because they know they couldn't get it passed. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, it pains me to be on the opposite side of a vote with some of my friends, especially from across the aisle, and I hope this doesn't turn into a partisan vote, because as my friend from rural Deschutes County has accurately pointed out, this was brought forward by Representative Chuck Burley, and I remember him first bringing this concept to my office years ago and talking about it. I really like this bill. At first, I was reluctant. As we all know, I'm very supportive of more flexible land use in this state. Well thought out, managed growth, but definitely some more flexibility. The more I learned about trading these development rights, the more I realized this is exactly what I think we've been looking for to meet my goals, what I want, where I see Oregon going. This bill does add flexible land use. Much needed, I might add, flexible land use. It will protect and maintain working forests in this state, and I mean working forests where we log and even clear cut. I have no problem saying the words, and produce the wood fiber products that every single American uses and every single Oregonian demands. I highly recommend those who are opposed to logging go without using toilet paper for a couple days and then come back and talk to me about the wood fiber industry. And the best place to grow trees and produce wood fiber products is right here in the state of Oregon. There's nowhere in the world where we can produce the wood fiber products like we can here in Oregon. There's no one. We have the best forest land in the world. And this is where the wood fiber industry needs to be. And the wood fiber industry, by the way, supports this bill. This bill also allows for development, another word that people are afraid to use, even though we all live in developments, live in houses, work in buildings, pray in churches that are constructed on what used to be farm or forest land. It allows for development, which will create jobs, not just construction jobs, but long-term jobs. I think we've heard a little bit about that. It also will provide for, in the end, I believe hundreds, if not millions of acres of carbon sequestration, because this concept is not unique to just Oregon either. We do, in my humble opinion, matter of fact, I agree with almost everything my friend from rural Deschutes County said, except for how he's going to vote on the bill. We need to amend this bill. The 640 acres, I believe, is too small considering what they're giving up. And remember, folks, they could chop this tens of thousands of acres into 160-acre lots and sell them off. And everybody that you speak to definitely wants, does not want to do, to say nothing of the public safety issue that arises in that scenario. We do need to increase it, I think, 1,500 acres. I think the landowners that are stuck in the middle of this are willing to negotiate that, but definitely more than 640 acres, and we need to have them allow them availability to water, because without water, clearly nothing happens. The affordable housing part, I support the affordable housing part as long as the commercial component of affordable housing prevails. Let me see. I think people missed that one. The committee chair has promised, and I believe him, that he will continue to be engaged and participate in this and listen to the folks that have concerns, amend it, and I hope it comes back here with something he can concur in. And I think that's about it. Thank you very much. Good bill. Should pass or drive away.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I don't care what kind of face you put on this bill. It's not a logging bill. It's not a jobs bill. And I don't easily get offended. I think you guys know that. I'm pretty much smiles down the hallway and try to work with everybody. But I'm offended by this bill, and it's an affront to my district. It's an affront to Jefferson County. When I travel throughout the district, one of the main complaints that I hear is we make decisions as the people of Oregon, and you guys go to Salem and you try to pass a bill to change our wishes. And colleagues, that's one of the things we're doing here today. I don't think anybody in this room can say that I have attempted to come into your district and stir things up and change the will of the people. But including the Metolius Basin in this bill and the Echo Resort called Metolian is an affront, and it's coming into my district and telling my people the way it should be. Well, I'm here to say we're late to the party. In late 2005 and in 2006, there were public hearings when everybody in this room and several outside of this room could have come and participated in the decision-making process. That wasn't done. This is not a good bill, and I urge a no vote.
Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
So first I wanted to agree with the representative from Happy Valley. If you don't use toilet paper for a couple days, go see him. Don't come to my office. On the bill, Mr. Speaker, I find myself in an unusual position, and I wasn't going to speak to it, but it seems that sometimes your friends do not want you to disagree with them, and in this body, we should be able to reasonably disagree. That doesn't seem to be happening. I agree with the remarks that were just made. The reason, I would argue that the reason we had a Measure 37 and the reason we have so much skepticism is even after doing a big look task force to try to take into account the variety and the diversity in this state, seems to me this bill says, well, we appreciate local control, but not so much in this case because there's a particular resort that we don't like. So I see this bill as justifying the arguments that I don't like. And for my friends in the environmental community, if you want to do help to the company that has done more Measure 37 claims against this state than any other company, then you should support this bill. I urge a no vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Clem, do you wish to close?
Please.
Colleagues, there's probably six completely inaccurate statements that were made, but I blame myself. I blame myself for not spending the additional time to go to each and every one of you and walk you through this bill. And I was taught by the woman sitting right next to me, turn the other cheek. So I'm not going to correct them all. And I apologize if you don't feel that you know the details of the bill sufficiently. But there are multiple things that are in this bill. Every single one of them is voluntary for the person who's using it. I'm the chair of the committee that got tacked on to the end of it at the beginning of this session, rural communities. I grew up in one. I care deeply about them. That's why I was willing to take on the Thousand Friends of Oregon on this bill. They eventually got to neutral. But that was the only problem we ever had with this bill, was this bill was introduced at the beginning of session by the LCDC. The Thousand Friends of Oregon opposed it the entire session. I tried once to move it over to the Land Use Committee, and my committee thankfully didn't let me. And then finally, with about a week left to go, I realized, you know what? We can help the Skyline Forest. We can help, if there ever is a limitation in the Metolius River Basin, we can help these visionary entrepreneurs from the Metolian try a project somewhere. If there's never a House Bill 3100, this is completely irrelevant. The speeches that were given, I believe, are going to be back if 3100 ever makes it to floor. They'd be completely appropriate there, but I'm not sure that they spoke to this bill. So my interest in bringing this forward has to do with how do you assist rural communities when they are unable to take advantage of their natural resources, and in some cases that's going to be to convert some of it to houses, and in some cases it's going to be outside the UGB. The only question is, do we work with the timber property owners to cluster those houses in one corner of their property? And that's all this bill does. It says take your transferable development rights on homes scattered all over and move them into one corner so you can preserve working forestry. If the folks who don't want to use the authorizations in this bill don't use them, that's more for other timber owners to try and create rural and sustainable communities. And I, again, I'll take full responsibility for anybody who has a misimpression of any detail of this bill, but it is a good bill and it should pass.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes no. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes no. House Bill 2228A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Second reading, no, I'm sorry. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 9, in memoriam, David Lett, 1939 to 2008.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 9. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, if you look around, there's a pamphlet that we left on your desk in memory of David Lett. Just a little history on David. David Lett moved to Oregon over 40 years ago with a vision of making Oregon a preeminent wine production region.
David and his wife, Diana, spent the first year of their marriage planting and tending to the first 5 acres of their vineyard in Dundee, Oregon. They named their endeavor the Iree Vineyard in honor of the red-tailed hawk who nested on their property. In 1970, they produced their first vintage, including the Willamette Valley's first Pinot Noir and America's first Pinot Gris. International recognition of Oregon as a new world home for Pinot Noir was brought about by David Lett. He was also one of the winemakers responsible for founding the annual 3-day International Pinot Noir celebration. In 2008, David Lett formally retired and passed on the Iree torch to his son, Jason. David Lett passed away at the age 69 at his home in Dundee, surrounded by his wife and 2 sons. This is an important resolution, and I urge you to recognize David Lett's contribution to Oregon. And as everybody knows, Oregon is known for its Pinot Noirs, and I would assume that everybody in this room has tasted a Pinot Noir except for the representatives from the Inner East Portland and the representative from East Clackamas and the representative from East Multnomah County. But I'm sure after this session, when they turn 21, they can go on a wine tasting tour with me and we can all enjoy a glass of Pinot Noir together. Folks, I remember when I was younger, David Lett, I didn't know him personally, but some good friends of mine that I went to school with started a winery in the late 70s. And David helped them get going on getting their wine established and off the ground. And I remember talking to Adam one day when they said they were starting their winery. And I said, why would you do wine? Everybody drinks beer at the time. But it was the vision that he had and the ability that he had to reach out to other people to help them get started that has turned Dundee into the wine capital of the state of Oregon and the Willamette Valley into probably the preeminent wine capital, the whole Yamhill County wine capital of Oregon as well. So with this, I would urge everybody to vote aye in memory of David and the accomplishments he's made to the wine industry. I thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Today we've had now a second opportunity to demonstrate the breadth of this state's interests and both the humbling and uniting experience that this body provides for us. As my colleague from across the aisle and across some philosophical divides carries a resolution that I want to support. I did know David personally and spent many a Thanksgiving weekend at his wine tasting in McMinnville, but mostly want to focus on the vision that my good friend mentioned in his opening conversation about this. It's a rare individual who can see on a hillside 35 years ago all the potential that has now become Oregon's wine industry. And David Lett was exactly the person with that kind of imagination, drive, discipline, hard work, humor, humility, and persistence. It is completely fitting that we would honor him today, and I urge you all to take just a moment to remember his leadership and his vision of what Oregon can become, and allow us to thank him and his family for letting us share just briefly in that imagination.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Widener, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. SCR 9, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next. I'm sorry. Representative Barker, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request a return to courtesies.
Representative Barker requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would like to ask you to express your welcome to a group from Kinnaman Elementary School out in my area in Aloha. And Ms. Perkins is their leader up in the back balcony there. Thank you. Have a good day at your capital.
Welcome to your house. Great to have you here. Any further courtesies while we're here? Back to final reading memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the next memorial.
SJM2, urging Congress to enact legislation creating statewide transportation system to provide transportation for Oregon veterans to and from medical facilities.
Question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SJM2. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. SCR2 urges Congress to create and fund a statewide veterans transportation system that will transport veterans, particularly disabled veterans, to and from Veterans Affairs medical facilities. This resolution presents us with the opportunity to display a unified commitment to our veterans and to recognize the indebtedness we owe to their services. Currently, right now, the transportation system that we have for veterans is ran by volunteers. The vans are not set up for disabled veterans, and we have lots of holes in the gaps. A lot of it's seniors that are transporting them, and we're having troubles finding staff to transport the veterans to and from their facilities. So this resolution here is just a resolution to make it sure Congress knows that we need to do something either with the hospital or transportation to make sure we're taking care of our disabled veterans. And I urge everybody to vote aye on this bill today. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Widener, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should be, that the resolution, the memorial should be adopted, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Representative Wingard? Off the floor. SJM2, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next memorial.
SJM 12, urging Congress to enact tax refund intercept legislation permitting federal tax refunds to be used to pay overdue court-ordered financial obligations owed to states.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SJM 12. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Colleagues, I bring to you Senate Concurrent Resolution 11.
This should be SJM 12, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, this comes from your Judiciary Committee unanimous vote. Oregon is owed more than $1 billion in unpaid restitution, fines, fees, and penalties. The person who owed the money are under court order to pay, but have willingly ignored doing so. Oregon needs a change in the federal law to reach federal income tax refunds of those who have not paid their court-ordered restitution, fines, fees, and penalties. The court administrator's office estimates that we could collect as much as $60 million from federal income tax refunds. This resolution urges Congress to enact tax reform, intercept legislation permitting federal tax refunds to be used to pay overdue court-ordered financial obligations owed to states. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Representative Widener votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger? Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. SJM 12, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lie on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5550, relating to financial administration of the state treasurer and declaring an emergency. Bill 515, relating to warranties on motor vehicles and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 98, relating to veteran transportation, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 106, relating to Oregon Youth Authority. Senate Bill 380, relating to testimony and criminal proceedings. Senate Bill 398, relating to equines. Senate Bill 622, relating to geese and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 625, relating to Ewing Young. Senate Bill 631, relating to phosphate cleaning agents. Senate Bill 685, relating to extensions of credit.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 50, relating to deadlines for notices of claim on contractors' payment bonds and declaring an emergency.
And colleagues, just so you have a sense of where we are, we're going to be going until probably just before noon. So in terms of sense of timing, however many bills we get to until just before noon. Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 50A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill comes to you out of your House Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed unanimously. It was brought to us by Boley. There was no opposition. Currently, individuals have 120 days to file a prevailing wage complaint with Boley and apply for payment of back wages, as it is now. The time can be too short, leaving workers without significant time to file a claim. This bill extends the current filing deadline from 120 to 180 days. It's a good bill. Should pass.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Widener votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 50A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 53, relating to prevailing rates of wage and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of Senate Bill 53. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Bear with me while I muddle through these talking points to Senate Bill 53. The bill resolves three technical issues surrounding the passage of House Bill 2140 of 2007, which significantly amended Oregon's prevailing wage rate law, a bill that also had much controversy but proved to provide $100 million and more in prevailing wage jobs as a result of the passage of that bill. First, the measure removes the requirement for including information regarding the required prevailing wage fee in a public works contract. Secondly, it clarifies that the contracting agency pays the fee when the Bureau of Labor Industries is notified of the contract being awarded. And thirdly, specifies that prevailing wage rates owed to a worker must be paid on the contractor's regularly established payday. I'm sure these reports will increase if the Senate sees fit to pass that excellent piece of legislation, House Bill 2430, which also will increase prevailing wage in the state of Oregon. Good bill should pass. Urge your vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Representative Matthews? off the floor. And Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 53, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 60, relating to fees incurred by Bureau of Labor and Industries for collection of judgment.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 60. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 60, which comes to you from the Business and Labor Committee without opposition, essentially closes a loophole. Currently, when BOLI utilizes the Department of Revenue to collect delinquent judgments, the fee charge actually is deducted from the wages or damages awarded to the complainant. That currently is not the case with private collection agencies who already have the statutory authority to deduct fees. This will give that authority to BOLI as well.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Senate Bill 60, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 109, relating to sellers of travel.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 109. Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 109 repeals the voluntary certification of Association of Sellers of Travel. The state began supervising the travel industry in 1979 when there were a series of serious problems, and the legislature gave the Attorney General authority over travel tours. Since then, the program has changed from being a mandatory registration for most Oregon sellers of travel to, in 1993, a voluntary certification program for associations of sellers of travel. The Oregon American Society of Travel Agents, ASTA, a state chapter of the National Trade Association, received that certification in 2003. They surrendered the certification in May 2008. Department of Consumer and Business Services does not have any record of ever having received complaints about the association when it was certified. Since the certification is voluntary and now no association participates, there are no substantial consumer protections provided through the department's certification process. In addition, the program gives DCBS only limited authority to deny, suspend, or revoke a certification. There is no permanent funding or staffing associated now with the program. With repeal of the program, the amount remaining in the general fund, somewhat over $69,000, that amount can be transferred to the state general fund. The majority of these funds accumulated during the period when the state registered all travel agents and agencies, that being from 1993 to 1999. Even with repeal of the voluntary certification of the association, Oregon Department of Justice has broad enforcement powers under the Unlawful Trades and Practices Act to enforce any fraudulent or deceptive conduct. Consumers also can pursue a private right of action to pursue consumer complaints that are not resolved by the industry itself. I urge your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kennemer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 109, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 110, relating to death benefits paid in workers' compensation claims.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 110. Representative Witt, followed by Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 110 comes to you from your Committee on Business and Labor on a unanimous 10-member vote. Senate Bill 110 increases the benefit paid for final disposition and funeral expenses in workers' compensation death claims from 10 to 20 times the average weekly wage, which is currently just over $721 per week. Benefits for dependents aged 18 to 23 years of age who have no surviving parent are set at 4.35 times 66 2/3% of the average weekly wage, until such time as the beneficiary ceases to attend a higher education program, graduates from an approved institute or program, or reaches his or her 23rd birthday, whichever is earlier. The bill also specifies that after the costs of final disposition and funeral expenses are paid, that any remaining benefits be paid to the worker's estate within 60 days of acceptance of the worker's compensation claim. Colleagues, Senate Bill 110 received the unanimous approval of the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee. I urge the equally strong approval of this chamber.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Do you want to try the mic back at my desk behind you? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, twice in my life I've had fatalities. One was when I was a young foreman. I lost an 18-year-old on the job. He had a family, and this would be just compensation for the burial part of this. The other one, I was 40-some years old when I lost my stepdad. And I know at these times that you don't want to worry about these issues. I know during these times everything's up in the air. I know we need to make sure that when a fatality happens, even though it is a horrendous thing for a family to go through, that we as a legislative body should make sure that that is not a worry. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Witt, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 110, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 113, relating to accreditation of post-secondary schools.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 113A. Representative Kamm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 113 possibly could have been, should have been, on the consent calendar, but we just wanted to review it with you. It comes from the Education Policy Committee. It is a technical change that realigns the jurisdiction of the Office of Degree Authorization so that all similar colleges are treated the same way. It also clarifies which schools come under the jurisdiction of the Office of Degree Authorization. Senate Bill 113 makes these changes by classifying all nonprofit, regional accredited colleges such as Willamette, George Fox, Linfield as exempt from oversight of the Office of Degree Authorization as long as these schools retain regional accreditation. The bill would give the Office of Degree Authorization responsibility for all for-profit colleges such as University of Phoenix, Western Culinary Institute, and ITT, and others. The small number of non-profit colleges that do not have regional accreditation are also covered under that responsibility. In addition, any brand new private colleges in Oregon would be under the Office of Degree Authorization for 5 years. This is an office that has the highest accreditation in our nation. They do an exceptional job, and we take their recommendation with a due pass recommendation from all members of the committee is unanimous, and we appreciate your support here on the House floor. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Comp, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen, off the floor. Senate Bill 113A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the remaining bills on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over until its proper place on Wednesday, May 13, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business to the House, other business to the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, we will caucus immediately following adjournment and keep you no longer than 15 minutes. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Land Use Committee meeting will be delayed 1/2 hour today. We will meet at 3:30. Land use at 3:30 today.
Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, Senate and House Republicans together introduced what we called the Back to Basics budget. This was a common sense proposal that moved away from the current status quo in budgeting. The Back to Basics budget is a no cuts, no new taxes budget proposal that uses existing cash on hand, accurate revenue forecasts, and importantly, prudent savings. More importantly, the Back to Basics budget begins with spending levels using the 07-09 levels and leaves an excess of $1.3 billion in surplus to be used for, among other things, number one, ensuring no school days are cut, number two, to make targeted and justified increases to Department of Human Services to account for increased caseload, three, to offset any additional revenue shortfall that may be realized in Friday's forecast, and four, to make other targeted program adjustments, including issues like Measure 57, which Oregonians overwhelmingly passed. Colleagues, today, of the more than 260,000 unemployed Oregonians, or the thousands and thousands of others who are underemployed, how many of them would love to know that they would have the same income they had last year when they had a job and have 10% in the bank for contingency? I encourage you each to take a look at the Back to Basics budget. This is a proposal we are offering as a tool, and we look forward to working with everyone in the building to balancing the state's budget with existing revenue and according to the common sense and priorities of Oregonians. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Representative Jefferson Smith, I'm blinded by the light coming off your finger.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, you may have noticed two things. One, that I was not here yesterday, and the other is that I'm now have a growing fondness for jewelry. I have been with Catherine Lisowski now for a while. The political schedule had been in the way of our ever finalizing our negotiated arrangement and becoming lifetime husband and wife. We decided a few weeks ago, more than a few weeks ago, in seeing the challenge with the calendars. Her mother had passed away when she was 19. My mother had passed away when I was 17. And Mother's Day weekend had always been an atrocious weekend for us ever since. And so we decided to elope and get married on Mother's Day weekend. So from now on, it would be more of a happy memory. We'll have a party this summer. We'll invite colleagues to come if you'd like to, if you'd like to offer her your condolences. But I appreciate the time, and I'll stop talking now. Thanks very much.
Congratulations, Representative Smith. Further remonstrances, Representative Smith. You get a special exemption on your honeymoon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One thing I meant to mention that I mentioned to a couple of friends, if you'll know, people who have seen my ring, which you haven't, so I'll just explain to you, will notice the name. We wondered whether we should put an engraving in it, and in case, well, at least you should lose, if you lose it, you should put something. So he said, please engrave, quote, Jefferson Smith, end quote, and they indeed engraved, quote, Jefferson Smith, end quote. So I have that inside my ring if people would like to see that later. Yeah.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, May 13, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Wednesday, May 13, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.